A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it picks up a thread we've been tugging at for a while. He says the fake door signs bit from that rental building conversation was funny, but it got him thinking about the real thing. When an intelligence agent is operating under deep cover, the privacy-maximizing advice we give civilians starts pulling in the opposite direction. Because today, having no Facebook, no LinkedIn, no Instagram, the read isn't this person values privacy. The read is, this person is hiding something. And if you need a backstory to hold watertight, you can't just fabricate a physical alias. You need a digital history that looks lived in, consistent, and boring enough to survive scrutiny. His question is, how do the professionals actually pull that off?
This is the paradox that makes the whole field fascinating right now. The same behaviors that used to signal, I'm privacy conscious, now signal, I have something to hide. And automated screening tools don't distinguish between the two. You delete your social media, you look like a ghost. You keep a profile, but it's bare, you look like a sock puppet. The sweet spot has gotten vanishingly small.
The joke about fake door signs, it was absurd on its face. But the underlying logic scales up in a way that's genuinely unsettling. You're constructing a surface-level signal that says nothing to see here, and the more you think about it, the more that's exactly what an intelligence legend is. A door sign at the scale of an entire life.
And the stakes invert completely. For a civilian, the worst-case scenario of a bad privacy setup is some targeted ads or a data broker profile you didn't want. For an operative under non-official cover, an NOC, a single inconsistency in a digital legend can mean exposure, arrest, or worse. The Russian illegals program has been dealing with this for decades, and the digital layer has made it exponentially harder.
Let's sit with that tension. Daniel's question gets at something most privacy advice completely misses. The old playbook was, minimize your digital surface area. Delete accounts, use pseudonyms, stay off the grid. But that advice was written for an era when being offline was normal. Now it's a red flag that triggers exactly the scrutiny you were trying to avoid.
It's not just intelligence agencies running these checks anymore. Open source intelligence tools, Multego, Spiderfoot, social graph analysis platforms, have gone consumer grade. A landlord can run a background check that flags applicants with no social media presence. A hiring manager's screening software can surface the fact that your LinkedIn has no connections from before 2023. The tools built for counterintelligence are now being used to evaluate whether you're a real person, in entirely mundane contexts.
Which means the gap between privacy-conscious civilian and cover identity has narrowed to almost nothing, but the stakes are wildly different depending on which side you're on. A tenant flag for manual review is annoying. An operative flagged for manual review is a diplomatic incident.
And the techniques we're about to dig into, sock puppet farms, backstop social media histories, persona management software, were developed for the highest stakes scenarios imaginable. But they're bleeding into civilian life in ways most people haven't noticed yet.
Daniel's question is really two questions. The first is mechanical. How do you build a digital identity that looks lived in, with years of plausible history, across multiple platforms, without leaving traces that contradict the cover? The second is philosophical. What does it mean that the techniques for answering that question are becoming relevant to ordinary people who just want to rent an apartment without being flagged as suspicious?
I'd add a third layer, the arms race aspect. Every technique for constructing a digital legend has a counter technique for detecting it. The operatives are building better fakes, the OSINT analysts are building better detection, and the rest of us are caught in the middle, trying to figure out whether having a boring Instagram makes us look normal or makes us look like we're trying too hard to look normal.
That's the uncanny valley problem, and it's brutal. A profile that's too perfect reads as fake. A profile with no gaps reads as fabricated. The very things that make a digital footprint look clean are the things that make it look constructed. Real people are messy, inconsistent, and occasionally post things they regret at 2 in the morning. A legend has to simulate all of that without actually being any of it.
Simulate it across time, which is the hardest part. Anyone can create a Facebook account today and fill in a bio. Making that account look like it's been active since 2019, with a plausible posting cadence, interactions with other accounts that themselves look real, and a network graph that doesn't collapse under analysis. That's an engineering problem of genuine complexity.
That's the territory. The mechanics of building a digital legend from scratch, the knock-on effect as those techniques trickle down into civilian life, and the uncomfortable question of whether any of us are as authentic online as we think we are. Where do you want to start?
I think we have to start with the actual craft. How the professionals build sock puppets at scale, how they age accounts to look lived in, and how they maintain cross-platform consistency without creating the very patterns that detection tools look for. Because the craft is impressive, and understanding it is the only way to understand why the civilian privacy advice has to change.
Then we can get to the part that I think will make listeners uncomfortable, which is how these same techniques are already being used on them, by employers, by landlords, by dating apps, and what that means for anyone trying to navigate privacy in a world where invisibility reads as guilt.
Let's dig into the mechanics. To understand how professionals solve this, you have to start with the concept of a legend, in the intelligent sense, not the folklore sense. A legend is a fabricated backstory detailed enough to withstand investigation. In the pre-digital era, that meant forged documents, planted records in physical archives, and a memorized personal history the operative could recite under pressure. The digital era adds an entirely new dimension. The legend now has to exist online, and it has to look like it's been there for years.
This is where the civilian privacy advice completely breaks down. The advice says, don't put anything online. The legend says, put a carefully constructed version of a life online, and make sure it's boring enough that no one looks twice.
That's the core of why a digital legend is harder to maintain than a physical one. A physical legend is mostly static. Forged documents sit in a file. A memorized backstory lives in your head. But a digital legend is dynamic. It has to behave like a living person behaves online, which means it has to post, like, share, connect, go dormant for a few weeks, come back, post something mildly embarrassing, delete it 3 hours later. It has to have a rhythm that reads as human.
Which is wild when you think about it. The hardest thing to fake isn't the content, it's the cadence. Real people are inconsistent in ways that are actually consistent when you zoom out. They post more on weekends. They go quiet during a breakup. They suddenly get really into sourdough for 6 weeks, and then never mention it again. A legend that doesn't simulate that kind of organic drift is going to fail under any kind of temporal analysis.
Temporal analysis is exactly what OSINT tools are doing now. They're not just looking at what you posted, they're looking at when you posted it, how long the gaps were, whether your activity patterns match the claim demographics of the persona. An account that posts exactly once every 3 days at 10 a.m.? That's a bot. The detection tools have gotten granular enough that looking normal is an actual engineering challenge.
We're talking about fabricating not just a history, but a behavioral fingerprint. And that fingerprint has to hold across platforms, which each have their own norms and rhythms. The way you use LinkedIn is not the way you use Instagram, is not the way you use Reddit. A legend that posts the same content across all three is instantly recognizable as fake.
And this is where the concept of a master biography document comes in. Intelligence agencies maintain what's essentially a canonical timeline for each legend. Key life events. Graduation year, first job, relocation, marriage, are locked down in one place. Every platform account references that same timeline, but never verbatim. Verbatim copying across platforms is itself a detection signal, because real people don't talk about their lives identically on LinkedIn and Instagram.
They don't talk about their lives identically to different people in the same room, let alone across platforms. The LinkedIn version of "I got a new job" is grateful and professional. The Instagram version is a photo of a desk with a coffee cup and a caption that's 3 emojis. If both accounts post the same paragraph, you're not looking at a person, you're looking at a script.
That's exactly the term some analysts use. The more consistent a persona is across contexts, the more likely it is to be fake. Real identity is context dependent. We perform different versions of ourselves for different audiences, and a good digital legend has to simulate that performance across every platform the persona would plausibly be on.
Which brings us to the question Daniel's really asking. How do you build something that detailed, that dynamic, that cross-platform consistent, without the whole thing collapsing under its own weight? Every post you fabricate, every connection you make, that's a potential point of failure if someone cross-references timestamps, geotags, or network overlap. The more detailed the legend, the larger the attack surface.
That's the brutal trade-off. A sparse legend is easier to maintain, but easier to flag as suspicious. A detailed legend passes scrutiny better, but has more seams that can come apart under investigation. The professionals have developed some sophisticated techniques for threading that needle, and that's what we should get into next. The first layer is what they call sock puppet farms. I don't mean one person running three alts. I mean infrastructure. Clusters of accounts, each with a fully backstopped biography, managed through isolated browser profiles and dedicated virtual machines, so there's no cross-contamination. An agency like the GRU or MSS might maintain hundreds of these simultaneously.
So we're not talking about some guy in a basement with a burner phone and a dream. This is industrial-scale identity fabrication.
It has to be. Because the first thing a modern OSINT investigator does when they encounter a suspicious account is check the network graph. If your persona has 12 friends, and 11 of them are also sock puppets created within the same 3-week window, the whole thing unravels in about 90 seconds. So the farm has to be dense enough that puppets can interact with each other plausibly, liking each other's posts, leaving comments, appearing in group photos, without creating a closed loop that screams fabricated network.
Which means you're not just building a fake person, you're building a fake social world. The persona needs a coworker who posts annoying motivational quotes, a college friend who tags them in decade-old photos, an aunt who comments so handsome on every profile picture. The absence of those things is itself a signal.
The photos are a whole sub-discipline now. The old technique was stealing images from real people, find someone on a Russian social network, grab their photos, use them for your legend. That's what burned the Russian illegal in Slovenia in 2023. A reverse image search traced the profile picture to a stock photo site. Stock photos are kryptonite for a legend. The moment one gets flagged, the entire persona is compromised.
What's the modern approach?
StyleGAN and Midjourney mostly. StyleGAN can produce photorealistic faces that don't correspond to any real person, which means they're immune to reverse image search. The more sophisticated operations generate not just a profile picture, but a whole visual history. The same face at different ages, in different settings, with different hairstyles. Pair that with Midjourney for contextual photos. Person at a wedding? Person holding a fish on a dock? Person in front of a landmark plausibly near their claimed hometown? And you've got a visual record that passes casual inspection.
Holding a fish on a dock is such a specific call-out, and you're completely right. Every real person has at least one inexplicable photo with a fish. The absence of the fish photo is suspicious.
I'm not even joking. Pattern of life analysis looks for exactly that kind of thing. Real people have hobbies. Real people go on vacations and take terrible photos. Real people have a phase where they post too many pictures of their cat. A legend that doesn't include some version of that reads as sterile.
You've got your farm infrastructure, your generated faces, your visual timeline. But the thing that keeps me up is the aging problem. A freshly created account with no history is the digital equivalent of walking into a bar and announcing, "You've lived in this town for 10 years when nobody's ever seen you before."
This is where it gets technically fascinating. There are essentially three approaches to aging an account, and professionals use all of them. The first is backdating, inserting content into the timeline at past dates. On platforms that allow you to change post dates, this is straightforward but risky, because the platform's internal logs will show the edit. On platforms that don't allow it, you're relying on exploiting API vulnerabilities, or, in some cases, compromising the platform's database directly.
Which escalates from terms of service violation to international incident real fast.
The more common approach is the second one, pre-aging. You create accounts years before you need them and let them sit, accumulating a real temporal footprint. An agency might spin up 50 accounts in 2021, have them post sporadically for 3 years, and then activate one in 2024 when an operation requires it. The account has genuine age. The creation date checks out. The early posts are real, even if the persona is fabricated.
That requires a level of patience and long-term planning that most people can't fathom. You're building assets you might never use, on the off chance that one becomes operationally relevant 3 years from now. It's the intelligence equivalent of burying a cache in the woods and hoping the trees don't grow over it.
It's why the best legends are built by organizations with multi-year timelines and dedicated infrastructure budgets. But the third approach is the one I find most clever, interaction aging. Instead of fabricating a history from scratch, you have the sock puppet interact with real, existing content from years past. The persona likes a 2022 tweet about a TV show they would plausibly have watched. They leave a comment on a 3-year-old Reddit thread about moving to Chicago, which is their claimed city. They follow accounts that were popular during their claimed college years and engage with archived posts.
You're borrowing temporal legitimacy from real content. The timestamp on the original post is genuine. The interaction date is recent, but the context places the persona in that earlier moment. It's a kind of temporal laundering.
That's exactly the phrase some researchers use. And it's effective because most automated detection tools aren't sophisticated enough to distinguish between this account existed in 2022 and posted then, versus this account was created last month and interacted with content from 2022 in a way that implies contemporaneous presence. The distinction requires deeper analysis than most screening algorithms perform. Here's where it gets interesting, and by interesting I mean unsettling for anyone who isn't a spy. These techniques don't stay in the intelligence world. They bleed into civilian life in ways most people haven't clocked yet.
The detection side, you mean? The same tools that catch a GRU sock puppet are now screening rental applications.
TransUnion's Smart Move Tenant screening product, and this came out in 2025, started factoring social media presence into its risk assessments. An applicant with no digital footprint gets flagged for manual review. Not because they've done anything wrong, because the absence of data is now treated as data.
Which is the thing that should make everyone listening pause. The algorithm doesn't know you deleted your Facebook because you were sick of election arguments. It just sees a gap where a person should be, and gaps are suspicious.
It's not just landlords. Employers are running these checks. Dating apps are integrating background verification. The standard of digital authenticity developed to catch spies is now being applied to everyone, and most people have no idea they're being measured against it.
The old advice, delete everything, go dark, minimize your surface area, that advice is actively harmful now. You're not making yourself invisible. You're making yourself conspicuous in exactly the way that triggers the automated scrutiny you were trying to avoid.
The gray man concept from physical tradecraft applies perfectly here. The goal isn't invisibility, it's unremarkability. A gray man in a crowd is the person you look directly at and immediately forgot. A digital gray man has a LinkedIn with a plausible but generic job history, an Instagram with occasional photos that reveal nothing about their location, and a posting cadence that's consistent enough to read as human but boring enough that no one scrolls past the first 3 posts.
Boring is the operative word. A digital legend should be so uninteresting that the investigator's eyes glaze over. The compliance officer at a mid-sized firm who posts once a month about industry conferences. The graphic designer whose Instagram is mostly pictures of coffee and typography. Nothing controversial, nothing memorable, nothing that invites a second look.
Which brings us to a problem the professionals have been grappling with that's about to become a civilian problem too. Maintaining a digital legend is cognitively exhausting. An operative has to remember which persona said what, on which platform, to whom, and when. Did Gerald, the compliance officer, comment on that LinkedIn post about regulatory changes, or was that the other persona? Did the graphic designer like her coworker's Instagram post, or did she forget because that coworker is also a sock puppet and the interaction was scripted 3 weeks ago? The mental load of tracking multiple fabricated lives across multiple platforms is crushing.
The consequences of a mistake aren't, whoops, awkward. They're existential for the operation. One, cross-contamination. Posting from the wrong account, using a phrase that links 2 supposedly unconnected personas. liking something at a time when the persona is supposed to be asleep in a different time zone, and the whole legend can unravel.
The professionals developed what's called persona management software. I don't mean a password manager. I mean dedicated browser profiles that are permanently isolated from each other, each tied to a specific virtual machine with its own operating system fingerprint, its own VPN endpoint that stays static so the IP address doesn't jump between countries, its own cookie jar and cached credentials. You open the Gerald VM and everything in that environment is Gerald. The browser history is Gerald's. The autocomplete suggestions are Gerald's. There is no possible way to accidentally post as Gerald from the graphic designer session.
That's a level of compartmentalization that most people can't even conceptualize. And yet the civilian versions of this are already appearing. Privacy-focused browsers with container tabs. VPN services that let you pin specific exit nodes. People who've never read a tradecraft manual in their lives are building poor man's persona management setups because they're trying to keep their work life, their personal life, and their online shopping habit from bleeding into each other.
Real people are messy. Real people accidentally post work complaints on their public account. Real people have their Spotify connected to their Facebook and their Instagram cross-posting to their Twitter. The more meticulously you compartmentalize, the more you look like someone with something to hide.
You're caught either way. Be messy and risk exposing real data. Be clean and look like a spy. The uncanny valley problem again.
That's the uncomfortable conclusion Daniel's question leads to. The line between privacy maximizing and cover identity has blurred to the point where ordinary people are being forced to think like intelligence officers just to navigate basic life tasks. Renting an apartment, applying for a job, existing in a world where your digital shadow is being scrutinized by algorithms trained to find anomalies.
Which means the practical takeaway isn't learn to build a perfect legend. It's understand that your digital presence is being read as a narrative, whether you're writing it intentionally or not. If you delete everything, the narrative is, this person is hiding. If you curate something boring and consistent, the narrative is nothing to see here. The question isn't whether you're performing a version of yourself online. The question is whether you're aware of the performance.
Let's get practical. If you're not a spy, but you also don't want to look like one to a tenant screening algorithm, what do you actually do?
The first thing is to flip the framing. Most privacy advice starts from the assumption that less is better. Delete, minimize, disappear. But we've just established why that backfires. The new framework is curate, don't erase. You want a digital presence that's boring enough to satisfy the algorithm without feeding it anything real.
I'd call it a low-signal, high-consistency strategy. Keep one or two platforms active with minimal, unremarkable content. A LinkedIn with a plausible but generic job history. You don't need to list every promotion, just enough to establish that you exist in a professional context. An Instagram with occasional photos that reveal nothing about your location, your relationships, or your daily routines. A photo of a bookshelf. A photo of a park bench. The kind of content that an investigator scrolls past because there's nothing to latch onto.
The consistency part matters more than the content part. An account that posts 3 times in 1 week and then goes dark for 8 months, reads as abandoned or fabricated. An account that posts once every few weeks with gaps that make sense. Quieter during the holidays, a little more active in the summer, reads as human. The rhythm is the signal.
Which brings me to the second actionable piece, and this is where I think the tradecraft mindset helps civilians. Use what I'd call the legend mindset for your own privacy planning. Write down the key facts about your public persona, industry, rough age range, general interests, and make sure every account you maintain is consistent with that narrative. Your LinkedIn says you work in logistics. Your Instagram shouldn't be full of photos from a co-working space in a city you don't claim to live in. The inconsistencies are what get flagged.
This sounds absurdly basic, but most people have never done it. They've accumulated accounts over years, each one reflecting a slightly different version of themselves at different life stages, and the aggregate picture is a mess. An ex who's still linked on an old Facebook account, a Twitter bio that references a job from 4 years ago, a Reddit account where you posted in a city-specific subreddit for a place you moved away from in 2019. None of it is damaging on its own. But together it creates a pattern of inconsistency that automated tools are designed to catch.
The fix isn't to delete everything. We've covered why that's counterproductive. The fix is to audit what's out there and bring it into alignment. Pick your narrative. Stick to it. Let the old noise fade into archive status where it's less likely to surface in a screening scan.
The third piece is for higher-stakes situations, and I want to be careful how I frame this, because the goal isn't to train a generation of amateur spies. But if you're a journalist working on a sensitive story, or someone trying to avoid a stalker, or a whistleblower figuring out how to communicate securely, the burner identity concept is worth understanding.
A burner identity isn't just a fake email address. It's a constructed persona that's internally consistent, but completely disconnected from your real life. Dedicated device. A cheap phone you bought with cash that has never logged into your real accounts. A separate Google account created on that device on a network that isn't your home Wi-Fi. A VPN with a static exit node so your IP address doesn't jump between countries and trigger location anomalies. A persona with a name, a backstory, and a set of interests that are plausible but untraceable to you.
The dedicated device is the part most people skip, and it's the part that matters most. Cross-contamination is the number one way burner identities fail. You create a separate Gmail, but you check it from the same phone you use for your real accounts, and now Google has linked the two. You use the same credit card to pay for the VPN that you use for your real Amazon purchases. The persona isn't separate if it touches your real life at any point.
This is where the persona management software concept becomes relevant even at the civilian level. You don't need a full VM setup, but using a dedicated browser, not just a separate profile, a completely different browser, for your burner identity creates a meaningful air gap. Firefox for your real life, Brave for the burner. Different visual themes so you never confuse them. Different password managers.
The principle underlying all three of these is the same. You're not trying to disappear. You're trying to look unremarkable in exactly the way that satisfies whoever's looking. For most people, that means a boring LinkedIn and a quiet Instagram. For higher stakes situations, it means a constructed identity that's clean, consistent, and completely severed from your real one. In neither case are you trying to win an arms race with a state-level actor. You're just trying to avoid being the low-hanging fruit that automated screening tools are designed to catch.
That's the thing I hope people take from this. You don't need GRU-level tradecraft to protect your privacy. You need to understand that the game has changed, that invisibility reads as guilt, that consistency matters more than volume, and that the most effective privacy strategy in 2026 is to curate a digital presence that's so boring, no one bothers to look twice. Which brings us back to the original question, and maybe a more uncomfortable one. As AI-generated content gets indistinguishable from human activity, does this whole arms race tilt in favor of the legend builders or the legend breakers?
I've been turning that over, and I don't think it breaks cleanly either way. On one hand, generative AI makes fabrication easier than it's ever been. You can produce a decade of plausible social media history in an afternoon. Unique photos, varied captions, interactions that match the persona's claimed demographics. The cost of building a convincing legend drops to nearly zero.
The detection side is using AI too. The same models that generate fake content are being trained to spot it. Pattern analysis that would take a human analyst weeks runs in seconds. And the detection tools have an advantage. The fabricators don't. They're looking at the entire ecosystem. A single account might pass scrutiny, but its relationship to every other account in the network is harder to fake convincingly.
The graph is the thing. You can generate a perfect fake person, but you can't generate a perfect fake social world without eventually creating contradictions that graph analysis catches. Real social networks have structures that are hard to simulate. Clusters that form and dissolve organically. Weak ties that bridge otherwise disconnected groups. The random guy from high school who likes every third post for no reason.
I suspect the arms race accelerates, but the advantage stays with detection, at least for now. Building a legend that survives deep network analysis is still an order of magnitude harder than flagging anomalies in that network. The fabricator has to be perfect everywhere. The detector only has to find one seam.
Which brings me to the thought I keep landing on, and it ties back to where Daniel started us. The fake door sign joke was funny because it was absurd. A grown adult printing out a fake nameplate to avoid neighborly small talk. but the underlying principle that we all perform versions of ourselves online, that identity is partly constructed, that the line between real and presented is blurrier than we admit. That's not absurd at all.
It's the human condition filtered through a digital lens. Everyone decides what to post and what to leave out. The difference between you and the intelligence operative isn't that one of you is performing and the other isn't. It's that the operative knows they're performing and you might not.
That's the question worth sitting with. Not, am I constructing a version of myself online? Because the answer is yes, whether you're aware of it or not. The question is whether you're an active participant in that construction, or just letting the algorithm's assumptions fill in the gaps for you.
The person who deletes everything thinking they've opted out of the game. They haven't opted out. They've just handed the narrative to whoever's reading the gap. The person who curates nothing and posts whatever occurs to them. They're still constructing something. They're just doing it without intention. The only move that actually gives you agency is to understand that the performance exists and to make choices about what kind of performance it is.
Daniel's fake door sign, scaled up, is every LinkedIn profile, every Instagram grid, every carefully selected profile picture. The absurdity wasn't the fabrication. The absurdity was being honest about it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1780s, the islanders of Vanuatu fermented breadfruit by burying it in leaf-lined pits for up to 5 years, producing a paste with a pH of roughly 4.2, comparable to modern yogurt, and a butyric acid concentration that would register on today's food safety scales as roughly 8 times the threshold for objectionable odor in commercial food processing.
So it smelled 8 times worse than legally objectionable, and they still ate it.
That's commitment to carbohydrates.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumintop. If you want more episodes, you can find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.